Oh, hello. Who am I, you ask? Well, that's on a need-to-know basis, and I guess you need to know. I'm Donnell from the Watching It Podcast, a little podcast where me and my co-host Robert dive into different TV shows and movies to give our viewpoints and reviews. TV shows like The Boys to the 1999 hit movie The 13th Floor. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, come join us at watchingitpod.com or on any podcast provider.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3, 3, 3, 3.
Thanks for joining the Backlit Cinema Podcast with Zach and Zoe.
On this show, we take a look back at the movies of yesteryear.
That means we're going to talk about some of the best movies from the 70s, 80s, and early 90s.
So thank you for joining us. Now let's get it started in here. Hi, this is Zach.
And this is Zoe, and welcome to the Backlit Cinema Podcast. Is Zach and Zoe, and this is our 50th episode. You know, a couple more episodes, and we'll have broadcast 52 episodes, and that'd be a whole year. Or is it 53? Is it 52 weeks in a year? Or 50? I'm thinking it's 52. So 52, it'll be like a year's worth of recordings. And that's not including all of the special episodes that we did with the movies that we watch, which I'm thinking about. Thinking about special episodes, I'm thinking about doing a special episode of Dune. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking about doing a Dune extravaganza. We watch the old Dune and then head out to the theaters, watch new Dune, and then we talk about the two movies.
Yeah, sure, I guess that works.
Because you hadn't seen the old Dune.
No, I have not.
Man, the old Dune, it goes north side of weird. It's like you kind of have to concentrate to watch that movie because Because it's like, it's deep sci-fi, super deep. So, I think the second movie is more geared towards modern audiences. But I had heard what people said, and the main difference about this movie that's coming out and the original Dune is that the original Dune is the whole first book of the Dune saga. And the second Dune is really only part of that book. It's like, I don't know if it's half or a quarter. I don't know how much of the first book, but it's not the whole first book. So it's going to end rather suddenly.
So it's like, oh yeah, we're gonna have more coming. This is a few pages.
If they're gonna have more coming, it's like in Lord of the Rings, they did that, but they filmed all three movies at the same time, so they knew that they were going to have more coming. But in this movie, it's like they don't know. Just like they don't know.
Just imagine, just show me all three movies. Edit one, have that release. Now edit the other two. And then after, it's like, oh yeah, the first one did good. Okay, now release the second one next year.
Right.
But we just finished next year. Just make a mock trailer.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what they did with Lord of the Rings. They basically filmed all three films at the same time.
Which is, I would say it's pretty smart because then you do have the films done.
Right.
You're just trying to see if the first one works. And then when it does, it is successful. You release the second one because right. It's already done. You don't have to do anything. No rumors are going to come in. I was like, no, right. We've been to that. But you can't say any rumors.
The problem is that if you do that and the first movie bombs, and then you're in deep poo-doo. Yeah. So that's why filmmakers rarely do that. But the only other movie that I can think of where they did that was the original Superman movie with Christopher Reeves. It's with Richard Donner. He had made and he was filming and directing both of them at the same time. But the second movie, he never actually completed directing. He had a fight with the studio, and so he left the project, and so they brought on a different director to finish Superman 2. But that's basically what happened with that one. But they knew that they had a hit. It was like that Superman is they knew when they were making the script that it was going to be a hit. So it was like, we're doing this. We're going to do two movies. We don't care. We're doing two movies. And so they did the two movies, and they were right. They were both hits.
But, I know. I know Harry Potter couldn't have done it because they needed the actors to grow up so it worked.
Well, I don't know, because it would have been better if they had done it, because it's like they were growing up too fast. Like they were going up slowly, because it's like they were growing up too fast, so fast that they actually had to make the sets bigger so that they would appear younger. So the tables were bigger, the chairs were bigger, yeah. The doorways were bigger. So they keep them as young as they could for a long time, and then they would gradually get older because they were aging anyway.
I also found out one of the actors that was replaced is because he actually went to jail.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I forgot. I forgot what's his name, but he was in the Slytherin, and he was with, can't remember the actor's name or who he played as, but he was like, he had blonde hair, right. And he was one of the bullies, and he got replaced because he went to jail.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
That'll happen.
That is amazing.
Don't go to jail. So the reason we started this show was to strengthen the bond between my son, Zach, and me, Zoe. We watched movies that I loved when I was growing up in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s, and we get Zach's impression on these great movies.
If you like our show, then rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser.com, or your favorite podcast app.
And please follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and you can find the details in the show notes. So, what have you been up to lately?
I've been watching some YouTube shorts, and one of them, I forgot what the YouTube channel is called, but he did one skit where basically there's an anime called Food Wars.
Uh-huh.
And in that anime, you have chefs, these kids cooking food. And then when I forgot what the profession is, it's like when they taste the food, right? When they taste the food, they basically experience this heavily sexualized experience with the food. And he basically replicated that. His wife basically made him some bacon, eggs, and avocados on the side. He ate it, and then he's just like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's like, and he gets the part with the avocado, like, it's really the avocado that's making it all. It's like, I had sex with the avocado, and I want to go sex again. And she's looking at him with a weird, like, what the hell is wrong with this man?
Right.
What is wrong with him? It's just eggs, bacon, and avocado,
right,
my man.
Right. So this is based off of anime.
Yeah, saying Food Wars was real. I was like, uh-huh, right. Yeah. If it was real, it would be real like that.
So what else you been watching?
Again, just other sorts. I don't really recall that much. I've been playing the new game that came out, Demon Slayer. It's very fun. It's not the same as Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm, but it's still fun.
Right.
I may not have a broken character where I can just continue with combos and then end it when I feel like it. But it's still fun.
Right.
It's nice. The only thing I have to struggle with is in the story mode trying to get S rank, because I have no clue how to get it other than just keep spamming my skills, use one grab, and just make sure I have 100% health.
Right. Yeah. So I'm playing what you call it. Well, yesterday I played Star Wars Fallen Order.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you was playing Star Wars Fallen Order.
Because it's tough. It's tough for me anyways. It's tough for me. The enemies are tough. It just one, two strikes and you're dead. I was like, man, just two strikes. You really got to be in your P's and Q's when you play that game.
I mean, Dark Souls. I'm like, this might raise people like, hey, why you? But yeah, Dark Souls.
Yeah, and then when you start playing over, you start to, you die. The thing that gets me, not dying all the time, it's how long it takes for the game to reset so you can go back into action, man. This game takes like, I don't know, 30 seconds, 45 seconds. And it's like, it burns your skin when you wait. The screen just goes totally black. You don't even get the courtesy of like a colorful view to look at while the game resets. It's totally black. And it's going to stay black until your character pops up again and you can go and start fighting. But one particular section, it's like, first you fight, it's like three guys. You got to fight these two guys with flamethrowers. And you remember that that robot on, it was Star Wars, a Star Wars story. Rogue One, the Star Wars story. Remember that one?
I'm trying to remember.
That's with the girl, and she had the robot on her team. And they had to get the Death Star plans at the end of the movie.
I think I know what you're talking about, but yeah.
Right. So the robot that had teamed up with them was a former Imperial robot. Mm-hmm. And its name was K2SO. It's a huge robot. It had lanky arms, and it was a former security droid before it was reprogrammed by the rebels. So that was that's one of the enemies that you end up fighting. So you fight them first in an isolated section. You fight it by itself, and it's fairly tough, but it's slow. But then then in this next section, you fight it, and you fight two stormtroopers with flamethrowers. I guess they're called flametroopers. That's the naming convention in Star Wars. Fighting the flamethrower dudes are tough because you can't obviously deflect flame.
Yeah.
The only thing you can do is wait for them to run out of fuel, because they can only shoot the flame and burst and then attack them when they're out of fuel or when they're resetting their flamethrowers. But at the same time, you got this security robot trying to beat you. And then if he grabs you, he'll start choking you out. And so I'm fighting those three. And then after about a minute, I guess after you kill a couple of them, then like three or four stormtroopers start shooting at you. And then you got those guys with the staffs that can fight you like with a bow staff, right. Those electric bow staffs. And so you got to fight. Now you're fighting like six people at the same time. And if you take too long, sooner or later, an AT-ST will show up and then it'll start blasting you. It's like, come on.
Don't you love Order 66? You got to love that order. Order 66, best order.
I'm fighting like five enemies plus an AT-ST, which if you don't know, is a giant chicken-legged robot. Yep. Mm-hmm. It is a chicken-legged vehicle. It's not really a robot. So it's giant. It's like two stories tall. It's got a huge like cockpit. And somebody's shooting at you from the cockpit, and it's throwing bombs and missiles at you. Plus, you're fighting like five different dudes. It's that little section right there. It's a mess.
You have to love Order 66. You know, it's the best one.
That's a lot. That was a lot to deal with. But I did end up getting past that section, and I think I went to sleep. So I'm still playing The Last of Us 2. I haven't gotten to the part that has this big controversy that everybody's talking about, but I'll get to it eventually. So I haven't played that since last week. I'll probably play it some more tonight after this recording and then tomorrow morning. Still reading the Thor, where they're doing the female Thor. And it's funny, right? Because I'm in a part of the story where Thor is obsessed with finding out who she is. He's basically, resolved himself that he's not going to hold the hammer, because there was a part where he could not lift up Mjolnir. Like, he was no longer worthy.
And
he didn't know why he was no longer worthy. And it was so bad that not even Odin could pick up Mjolnir. And he was the one that put the spell on it in the first place. So nobody can pick it up. And at first, Thor's distraught. And then there's this female that comes along. And now she is possessing the hammer. And at first, he wants to fight her for the hammer, but, you know, he realized that the hammer has chosen her. So he allows her, he gives his name to her. He says, "You are now Thor, and just call me Odinson." He wants everybody to call him Odinson.
Right.
So now she is like in name Thor. But there's a part of the story where he still wants to know who is holding Mjolnir. So he has a whole list of females that he knew. And he's slowly crossing off the names of the list. Like, he tried to ask Lady Sif on the sly if she was the new Thor, and she was offended and threw meat in his face, right? So, and then he went to see his girlfriend Jane Foster, but at this point, Jane Foster has cancer and she's being cared over by Thor's people.
Right.
But she won't allow them to use magic, so they have to use conventional medicine. And so because she has cancer, he's thinking that she's not it. So he's still going through the list of people. And like, he's got Broomhilda on the list, and Broomhilda is one of Valkyrie and you know, a bunch of other women. So it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how this story unfolds. And in the meantime, they're fighting Frost Irons and Malekith and the head of, hold on. Oh, it's just a special guest. Zachary's mom just kind of walked in the living room during the record. I was like, who's making that noise? Is it a mouse? So anyways, so there's all that going on in Thor. So it's very interesting. And I'm also started reading The Immortal Hulk again. No, is it? I think it's called The Immortal Hulk. And he's basically a really mean-spirited version of all the other Hulks that came before him.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't die, so he's also in. And they basically redid it as a horror comic with the Hulk being the monster, like the monster in a horror movie. That's what the Hulk is, except he's mad intelligent. So I'm reading that. And awesome. I'm still hooked on this YouTube channel called
Lawyer.
Yeah, The Lockpicking Lawyer. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have seen his stuff before. I was like, I'm just looking at it.
I like his videos. I think I said this before, but I like his videos because they're only like 3 or 4 minutes. And there was one I just watched earlier today where it's like, ooh, this is a master lock. And it's got, you know, it got these new features. This is one of the kind where the old vulnerability was you would take a pick and slick it in between these nozzles right here, and you would just open it just like that. But this one, it seems like they fixed that vulnerability. But unfortunately, there's another one where you could just take a mallet, bam, and it opened right up. It was a brand new master lock, and it was a combination lock where you dial the combination on the bottom of the lock, and he took a mallet. He gripped it in a certain type of way. So I think he closed the clasp together. He closed the shocker part and the main body. He closed them together, and he banged the body with the rubber mallet, and it came right open. It just popped right open. So if you buy a padlock, just remember, there's some easy ways of getting into them locks. And this guy is particularly good. Like, he'll tell you what locks are junk and what locks are really good locks. He'll pick every single one of them. But he picked this one lock, and he's like, a little trouble here and a little trouble here. Okay, oh, there's a false gate. Okay, I got it. Oh, and it pops open. But this is a very good lock. How is it very open? You just picked it. How is it very good? But the thing is, I think the thing to remember about locks is that most people don't pick locks. He does this as a hobby, and so that's why he does it. But most people trying to break into your stuff, they're not trying to pick the lock. If they need to get in, they're going to cut it anyway. So, but he just shows you. But some locks they have to be picked. But then other locks, it's like the master lock. You just bang it with a mallet and it comes open. So that's problem. Or like he'll take a gun safe, he'll just drop it on the floor in the corner and it pops right open. I was like, well, that's insecure, right? That was pointless. So yeah, I'm hooked on that one. And then the Casual Geographic, I just watched one the other day. I forgot which one he was talking about. I remember now. It was a video it was a type of wild boar, except it had gigantic balls, like gigantic testicles, like huge giant testicles. It was so large, it was like swinging behind it in between his leg, just going back and forth like a pendulum. It was like gigantic balls. And he was explaining that this kind of boar, it during mating season, it produces a lot of sperm, so it grows its testicles to a giant size during mating season, so it can squirt as much sperm in a female as naturally possible. So that was fascinating. And he was like, I can't explain how I know this, right? And then there's other videos, like Julie Noki, whose videos I watch in The Keef Crew. Did you see the last one?
For Keef Crew about Shore, Vinny, and
Smash. He was playing different characters. Uh-huh.
It was like, there's one thing I was like, I can relate on. It's like, another sword character. I'm like, it's not a sword character. He has a key. It's not really a blade. It's more just a giant key you can just whack people with. As you can clearly see, it's not a blade. It's just a giant key you whack people with.
Well, they like to call it a key blade. But it was funny, right? When it tell was like, all, this dude come in here.
Tell I made a bet with him saying, I'll eat a whole jar of peanut butter if Sora is ever put in Kingdom Hearts.
Like if Sora from Kingdom Hearts ever put in Smash.
And it's like, it's like, oh, is that a bomb fight? They put Dark Souls in here? Tell me, no, is that a Kingdom Blade? That's a key blade. And he's like,
he started crying, eating peanut butter. Talking about, I need water. I need water.
It gets knocked over.
Right. He's reaching for his bottle of water. The bottle of water get knocked over by the dude that's so excited that Sora's going to be in Kingdom Hearts. Now he's choked to death on peanut butter because he can't reach his water.
And then there's the Waluigi fans. They're like, oh, you know.
Yeah, the Waluigi fans.
Congratulations, guys. You know, I'm so proud. And then he just started going, and you know, apparently puking.
He's puking and farting or something at the same time.
I'm like, wow.
Yeah, he's really upset that Waluigi has never been put in Smash Brothers, a game that I've never played. Well, I have played it one time. That one time that I played it, I sucked furiously at it, and I hadn't touched it since. I was like, I kept throwing myself off the platform. I was like, well, this game isn't for me. So, also, still having trauma with You Break, I Fix. So, as you people might know, You Break, I Fix is actually a division of Esperion. You Break, I Fix is a brick-and-mortar store. Supposedly, what you're supposed to do is take your electronic to the store, and they're supposed to fix your electronic for a price, or And what they really want you to do is get their Assyrian home plan, where whatever devices you have in your house, you can take it to them and they'll fix it. Or you can file a claim with Assyrian, and Assyrian will either fix or replace your electronic. On paper, that sounds great, but I am having a seriously hard time getting this computer fixed, this laptop fixed, because it seems like the people at the store don't know what they're doing. And it's infuriating because they keep telling me one thing, and I get on the phone with customer service at Assyrian. They're telling me a completely different thing. I was supposed to get a call back from this You Break, I Fix store, but they didn't call me back today, and they're closed. Wait a minute. Yeah, they close tomorrow. They close Monday. So I won't even really be able to talk them until Tuesday. And I won't be able to resolve the issue until next week. It's a pain in the butt. So deal with You Break, I Fix at your own risk. Actually, it could be just the people that work there, because I had this situation where we went to Target today and we have one of those SodaStream devices. And with SodaStream, you replace the carbonated canisters. Now, I know that there are ways around using carbonated canisters provided by SodaStream, but I'd rather just use theirs because we don't drink it that much. We don't use it that much. But so basically the way it works is that when your CO2 canister is empty, you take it to an exchange site like Target, and you give them the empty canister, and they'll sell you a new canister for a half price. So the canisters are usually $30, and when you do the trade in, it's $15, which is fine. I can live with that. But the problem is, when I took it to the counter, the lady at the counter thought that I was doing, like, the can was defective and I was doing an exchange for a new can, or she thought it was broken. It's like, no, it's not broken. It's just empty. I just need, I'm just exchanging it so I can get the other one for half price. And she had no idea what was going on. She kept thinking that it was replacement because the can was defective. And the other associates at the customer service desk was like, no, he's exchanging the empty canister for a new one. You sell it for $15. And it's like, I don't think she still got it. Like, when I left and after I did my exchange, because somebody else is handling the transaction, I still don't think she understood what she was doing wrong. And so this is the same with You Break, I Fix. I think there are people who just don't understand what they're supposed to do. And that's why I'm getting this runaround. So it will be over. Eventually, somebody will understand what they're supposed to do, and I will finally get my computer fixed, or I will get a new computer, you know, whichever comes first. So that's the drama I'm going through right now. So, Zach, with that being said, won't you tell us what we just watched?
Tremors.
Tremors. Tell us about Tremors.
A small town gradually becomes aware of a strange creature which picks off people one by one. But what is this creature, and where is it? At the same time, a seismologist is working in the area. She detects tremors. The creature lives underground and can pop up without warning. Trapped in their town, the town folks have no escape. That was by Rob Hartill via IMDb.
Yep, that's about the size of it.
I would have rather said, you know, a quiet, peaceful town is living its ordinary days. When strange things start to happen, people are disappearing, and they find sheep mutilated, head in under head just popped on ground. You know, road is, and they can't really escape because the one way out is blocked off.
Right.
And so now they have to find a way to escape and call for help, or find a way to kill the things that are picking them off one by one, something like that.
Right. You could have added more, but I like a short thing that doesn't tell you too much about the movie, only that there's a monster, there's a small town, there's a conflict. There's conflict. Come see this movie where the people of the town fight this monster. So this movie was released January 19th, 1990 by Universal Pictures. No film production, and Stampede Entertainment. It grossed over $16 million in the U.S. and Canada on an $11 million budget. So it had, I wrote rave reviews. I think it's more to say it had really good reviews. I don't want to say rave. Rave is too hard, but it had really good reviews. And it didn't gross as much as people like it. Like you know, most people that see it, they really like this movie. But the problem is that not a lot of people saw it. I didn't do research and find out. But what happened is that after the movie's release, it got huge love on a video market, on the DVD market.
It's right.
Like, it became super popular after it was released on DVD. And it spawned like 6 or 7 sequels and a TV show. Like, it kept going on and on for a long time. So this movie was starring Kevin Bacon. He played Valentine. He played Valentine McKee. And Kevin Bacon, he's at this time, he was near the peak of his career. They hired him for his star power. He was the star for this movie. That's why they hired him. So he's been in Footloose, The Hollow Man, Mystic River, and A Few Good Men. Most of those really great movies. Do you remember something else he was in?
Not fully.
He was in X-Men First Class.
He was?
Yes, he played, and he ages extremely well. He played the, what's his name? The main bad guy. I want to say he's something black. Something, I can't remember. Remember in the early beginning of the movie, he had this dude, and he had the ability to adapt to anything. Like, he put in his face in the goat, in the fish tank, and his skin, his body changed so that he had gills on his face.
Yeah,
so he could survive. I forgot what his name is. He's way more powerful in the comics. But what happened was Kevin Bacon played a bad guy that took a ball of energy and put it in his mouth, and the guy exploded. So Kevin Bacon was the main bad guy of X-Men First Class.
Okay.
So Kevin Bacon was so popular at one time, there's a game called The 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, because he's been in so many movies that people would say there are 7 people away from knowing Kevin Bacon personally. So they know like one person who knows another person that knows Kevin Bacon. But it was more like a movie game. So you would name an actor, and they would name the 7 people that they were away from being in the same movie as Kevin Bacon. So that's basically how popular Kevin Bacon was. So who's the next person?
We have Fred Ward. He was Earl Bass. Bass?
I think that's Bass.
Okay.
But it could be Bass.
He was in Shortcuts. Shortcuts. Romeo.
Whoa, that's
not
it.
Not Romeo. Remo?
You almost got it. Change the pronunciation of the E. Change the E.
Change the E.
Well, remember, the vowels have 2 sounds.
Rama? Wait, no. Ramo.
No. You're changing the O sound. You're not changing the E sound. Remo.
Oh, Remo? Okay. Wow.
Because you said Ramo, and Remo is Remo.
Oh, Remo Williams. The adventure begins. Naked Gun 33 1/3, The Final Assault.
Right. That's all one title. So Fred Ward is, I know him best from Remo Williams, because he played Remo Williams. And I really want to put that on the list, but I'm kind of iffy on it. Because Remo Williams is an adventure movie. It's supposed to be the start of an adventure series. That didn't quite happen. It was like a movie, because the movie was corny and it was cheesy, but I loved that joint. I must have watched it like 3 or 4 times. So the next person is Finn Carter. She played Rhonda LeBeck. She was in As the World Turns and China Beach. She's mostly a TV actress. So she has huge TV credits. She hasn't really done much movies, but she was really good in this movie.
We have Michael Gross.
Yep.
Gross. He played as Bert Gunner. He was in Family Ties, most Tremors movies / TV shows. So basically, like, we're going to keep using him.
Right. He mostly does TV, but he's most famous for Family Ties. He played the father in Family Ties, and that's what most people remember him as. And it's like, when you watch this movie, oh my god, that's what, because we knew him by his TV character's name, and I can't remember what his TV character's name, but it was like, god, that's father from Family Matters. What is he doing in this movie? But and he's playing a totally different character than what he plays in character. You know, he's a total prepper in this movie. So next is Reba McEntire. She plays Heather Gunner. She was in a TV show called Reba. She was in The Little Rascals, 1984, and One Night at McCool's, and she's an award-winning country music artist.
1984? You mean 1994?
Yeah, I meant 1994. Is that what I said, 1984?
You said 1984, indeed.
Yeah. Well, The Little Rascals, really, the source material is so old that I would have been right either way. Like, the original Little Rascals came out in, like, the 1940s or 1950s. And we used to watch that when we was growing up. So we watched the reruns or whatever. So, they may have had a remake in 1984, but yeah, this is the 1994 version.
Now you have Robert Jane Chang.
Yep.
Melvin Pope. Pope?
I think that's Plub.
Plub. Mythica Movie Series. Okay, it's a movie series called Mythica.
Yeah, there's a movie series called Mythica. I'm not sure if it's made for TV or if it's... I'm pretty sure it hasn't been in theaters. Maybe it was directed video. He's been in a lot of TV shows. It's like, as I was watching this movie, I was like, yeah, I remember that dude. He's been in a lot of TV sitcoms, and in his sitcoms, he's usually the protagonist, like usually the bully or the antagonist kid, right? So he's probably been in Silver Spoons. He's probably been in Different Strokes. He's been in a lot of different sitcoms. And but he really hadn't done much acting outside of television. And next is Charlotte Stewart. She played Nancy. She was in Eraserhead and Twin Peaks.
Then we have Tony Gennaro.
That sounds right.
He played as Miguel.
And we have Ariana Richards. She played Mindy. She was in Jurassic Park, The Lost World, and Jurassic Park. So she's been in a few other different ones, but this is the ones that she was most known for. And in this movie, she's way younger than when she was in Jurassic Park. And then she was much older, like pretty much an adult in The Lost World, Jurassic Park. That was the third sequel. And so like you can just slightly recognize her from Jurassic Park.
I thought she looked familiar. I was like, how does she look familiar?
Right, right.
Let's see. Richard Marcus as Nestor. He was in The Pretender. Well, why is an F there? Was that on accident?
Yeah, that's an accident.
The Pretender and Street.
Saint Elsewhere. See, you got. This is the second time I put that there.
Yeah.
You wanted to say Street so bad.
Yeah, I wanted to. I was like, no, that's not Street.
The next one is Victor Wong. He played Walter Chang, and we know this dude. He was in 7 Years in Tibet, The Last Emperor, Three Ninjas, and where else do we know this Chinese guy from?
Trouble in Little China.
Yes, Big Trouble in Little China. I said Chinese guy. Yeah. Just in case you didn't know who I was talking about.
I mean, I knew who he was. I remember his face. I was like, okay.
Right, that face is unforgettable. So whenever you see that face, like, I know that guy. He's one of the greatest character actors of his time.
And then lastly, we have Sunshine Parker as Edgar. He was in Roadhouse, in Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Right. Well, that's a name, Sunshine.
Didn't really think a nickname would be a name, but okay. That could be
his real name.
That's what I'm saying. Apparently, that's his real name, Sunshine Parker. I do not really expect a nickname to be an actual name. To be honest, well,
you know that. When people get bored, all kind of strange names,
you know,
start
funny?
To come to the fro.
Remember that guy I told you about, that Food Wars?
What about
him? Okay, so there was another skit he did where talking about parents naming their babies, and one of them was doing the COVID, right?
Right.
He's like, what should we name our child? Huh, what about COVID? Oh, no, I got a better one. What do we get in for a jersey? You know, something like 19. Yeah. And then the pregnant mom that he's playing as, you know, had a bottle of Corona. I was like, I got another idea. What if we name her? I'm like, what? No. Are you not sure what's going on? Are you right? You can't be serious. Yeah.
Actually, Corona, it wouldn't be a bad name. It's Spanish for crown. And the only, or it's like the sun has a Corona. It's like a ring.
Yeah, but you really want to name your child Corona during the Corona? I don't think so.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you don't want to do that during the pandemic. Maybe make that a middle name.
This was directed by Rob Underwood. He directed City Slickers, Heart and Souls, and Mighty Joe Young.
Yeah, those are all fairly decent comedies. I didn't watch Heart and Souls. Actually, Mighty Joe Young was more like it's kind of like a monster movie with a larger than average gorilla. He's not like King Kong. He's just bigger than most gorillas. But City Slickers is a flat out comedy.
I was gonna say like Great Ape.
I don't know. You mean Great Ape the cartoon?
Yeah.
Something like that, I guess. I can't remember how exactly big Mighty Joe Young was, but apparently it was a grade 8 with a heart of gold, I guess. So this movie was written by S.S. Wilson and Brent Maddox. They were basically responsible for the screenplay. And they wrote Wild Wild West and Batteries Not Included. And it was also written by Ron Utterwood. He basically wrote all the... He didn't write all the Tremors. So he wrote this movie and all the other sequels that came after
Ron
it.
And Rob related?
Huh? Who?
Because there's one named Rob Underwood and the other one's named Ron Underwood.
Oh, I just wrote the wrong thing. It's supposed to be Rob.
I was going to say, okay, sure. There's two brothers with the same, almost identical first name, same last name.
It's supposed to be Rob Underwood. So anyways, so he wrote this movie and then, well, he wrote the story for this movie, but all the other movies are based on his characters, so he gets credit for all of those movies.
Yeah, and this was music by Ernest Troost.
Yes, and there's some interesting trivia behind that.
Written music for Dead Heat, The Mysterious Tadpole, and The Most Wonderful Egg in the World.
You know the difference between the first thing that I put down there and the second one?
One is talking about Dead Heat, and the other one's talking about The Most Wonderful Egg in the World?
Yeah, so there is a slight difference in the name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems kind of funny, right? So... Like Dead Heat was like, oh my God, that must be a serious movie. And then you're like, The Mysterious Tadpole. So I think what happened was early in his career, he did some like regular movie soundtracks. And then he decided that he wasn't about that life. And most of his credits seem to be for children's entertainment. So I'm 90% sure that The Most Wonderful Egg in the World and The Mysterious Tadpole are some kind of child related entertainment.
Listen, don't take the title from a name for gratitude, because there's a cartoon called The Happy Tree Friends. Now you'd think that's a cartoon kids show for kids, but it's not.
Well, I'm pretty sure, because if you consider his other movie credits, I'm thinking that this guy just didn't want to do movies anymore. So Dead Heat was actually a comedy, and but it was not a great comedy, right? So and then when you look at all the other cartoons or kids, because I don't know if they're puppet shows or cartoons or whatever, but when you look at all the other ones, collectively, they look like they're like kid shows for little kids. There's also one about a Tyrannosaurus that gave the biggest hug in the world or something. Yeah, so it's kids entertainment, I believe. So the executive producer of this film was Gail Ann Hurd.
All right, that's it for the rundown. And if you're enjoying the show, remember that you can get t-shirts, hoodies, mug, face masks, jerseys, and more at our website, backlookcinema.com, where you can click the link to either teesprings.com or teepublic.com. Now we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back to talk about our favorite parts of the movie, some movie trivia, and find out what some of the critics thought.
Hello everyone, this is Robert with the Watching It Podcast. We're a show that covers TV and movies. Join me and my co-host Donnell each week to talk about shows like Loki, The Lower Decks, Snowpiercer, Palm Springs, and Collateral. You can find us at watchingitpod.com or anywhere you get your podcast.
This is the situation. You're living a relatively peaceful existence. You, your families, and your friends are, for the most part, content. Let's keep it that way. You may not know it, but you might have a species of giant man-eating worms known as graboids living on your property. One of the signs of these vicious creatures are small tremors in your area. Are these tremors normal? Are they signs of a giant worm? If you feel tremors, call the Gummer's Extermination Service. They'll inspect your property for the giant flesh-eating graboids that have been known to menace small rural towns. Should they find any creatures lurking about, they have the firearms and explosives to effectively destroy these deadly crawlers. Graboids, scientifically known as Satyrus mexicana, are highly intelligent, so don't try to wrangle them yourself. Call the experts. Call the Gummers.
And we're back. And now is that part of the show where we talk about our favorite parts. So Zachary, what were your favorite parts of the movie?
You're not going to thank them for joining the, you know, the...
Oh, yeah, let me get that out the way. Once again, thank you for joining us. You can keep up with us by following our socials on Instagram and Facebook at Backlook Cinema Podcast and on Twitter at Backlook Cinema. We encourage you to leave feedback, comments, suggestions, etc. Or you can email us at fanmail@backlookcinema.com. Okay, okay. Got that out of the way.
Yeah, now we can
talk about our favorite parts.
Let's see. When, what is the name? Valentine and, where is his name? Earl are basically leaving. They see one of their buddies on a electrical tower. And they're like, what is he doing up there? Come on, let's go get him down. And they shout at him. They're like, okay, he's still not getting up. So they do a rock, paper, scissors. And Valentine loses, so he goes up to get him. And they find out that he died. And how he died was basically they took him to the doctor. Like, oh, yeah, he died from hydration. Like, what do you mean?
Dehydration.
Like, what do you mean he died from dehydration? Like, well, I guess he was out there for like 3 or 4 days and he just died of thirst. And it's like, what would keep him up there? It doesn't make sense. He has a gun. Like, what would make him be so scared to be up on that tower for 3 to 4 days and just die there?
Right. And what was more remarkable is how did they get him down? How did Valentine?
How did they get him down? Did they just unhook him and then just threw him down? Or did he like somehow magically carry him? Like, that's what I need to know.
Yeah, I mean, Valentine is in pretty good condition, right? He's not like hulked up, but he's in very good condition. But I can't see him carrying that man as twice his size down an electrical tower. I'm not seeing that, but maybe it's possible. He knew some carrying techniques that would allow that, but it's hard to imagine because it's like, it's funny, right? Because first they show him on the top of the tower. It shows Valentine looking at the dead friend on the top of the tower, and the next scene is the doctor examining the dead body. So it's like,
they're cool. Like, we're not gonna film on how he got him. I'm just gonna magically get him down.
It's like, man, that don't matter. Just come on, let's just go to the hospital scene. So that was always fun. What else you like?
Another good scene I like, I think this is after basically, yeah, the doctor and the doctor's wife die. Valentine and Earl goes to get the doctor. They're like, okay, they're gone. They're missing. This is not right. So they go back and they, no, that wasn't it. It was when they was going and they found, they was like, okay, what's going on with the farmer's place? They go and see that the farmer's chief is gone and mutilated. Then they find that the farmer's head is just right there in the ground. And they just go back. They come across two guys who are working on the road. And they're like, you got to leave. There's a murderer out there chopping off heads. And then they leave. And then one of the workers is like, hey, should we believe them or what? And he's like, no, don't believe them. Just get back to work. And then as he's working, he does strike the monster's head. The monster goes off. But because, again, this is a safety hazard, he has his leg, the wires are wrapped on his leg, so he ends up getting dragged with the,
jackhammer.
Yeah, a jackhammer that basically hits the monster, gets dragged up the mountain, he basically dies, and then the worker goes like, hey, what happened? Goes trying to figure out what happened, and then he dies because rocks fell on him.
Right,
I'm like, wow, that's wow.
Yeah, so, a guy using the jackhammer, just doing his job, accidentally hits a monster with his jackhammer, and hijinks ensues.
Safety has why is the cord around
how the hose got wrapped around his leg? I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's because of the one he was working. He just had it wrapped around, and I'm like, that's a safety hazard just off the bat for that thing to happen. I'm pretty sure they tell you to make sure that the cord is not going to be around your leg, or basically, this nowhere near your leg It might. A mishap might happen. The jackhammer's going to go off by itself, and the cord is going to wrap around the leg, and you're going to be dragged with it. I'm pretty sure they tell you that for safety, to make sure it's never wrapped near your legs.
Right. Yeah, you would think that. I wish, he should have paid attention, right? They should have left. It was like, nah, they just joshing us. No, they weren't joshing. They was for real. It's like, they didn't... Maybe it wasn't a serial killer, or maybe it was. They don't know. All they know is that they saw a guy that they knew. Because this is a small town. It's only 14 people.
It's a small town.
Everybody knows everybody. Everybody's his friends. So they saw their friend lying there with his head, like, decapitated from his body. And all of his sleep shattered. So, yeah, maybe listen to the guy. Listen to him and ask questions later. So what else did you see?
Now, okay, so... This is about the doctor and the wife. They're out there. I guess they're about to, I don't know, building a house or something. They're talking about, I don't know what they're moving, but they're moving something out of their car. And their plan is to do whatever they're doing now, finish it, and then go to, who is they trying to, Esbolt?
I think they're trying to go to a different town.
Yeah, that's
because the next day they're supposed to go to a different town, pick up some bricks, because they got the wooden frame up, so now they're going to put the bricks up.
Yeah, that's
the
what they're supposed to do, but then generator goes out, husband's like, oh, wow, the generator, I'm just going to go fix it. They go towards where the generator is at and notice that it's gone. And it's like, the generator's like was right here. And they pull the cord to see that it's no longer attached to the generator, only for it to be spit out from under the ground. Now, the wife is panicking, like, okay, let's go. Let's get out of here because something's not right. The husband, well, maybe this might be some, you know, geological something, a geyser going on. Maybe that's what I'm like. What do you mean?
Yeah, he thinks it's some kind of geological event or a geyser or something like that. He's all curious.
Wife is in a panic, and, you know, they start making it back to their car. But the husband get caught by the monster. It starts to get dragged down. The wife's trying to save him, but she couldn't do it. And see, and you know, he get eaten, and so she makes a panic and runs towards the car because she sees the things that are now that basically grabbed her husband. She makes it to the car, but the issue is she can't start it because she doesn't have the keys.
Right.
So all she can do is just basically stay in the car and hope that it goes away. But what the thing does, it basically makes a like a ditch, a hole for the car, so it seeps in from the back and they can get in that way to grab her.
Right. So, they basically create a sinkhole.
Yes,
and
sinkhole.
They bury the car, and then they get the car is like a hard, crusty shell, and she's like the soft inside, right? She's like the soft, gooey goodness inside the hard outer shell. That's when that she basically turned herself into an M&M. So, an M&M. Or a crab, like whether, you know, the tender bits of the crab are the inside of its hard shell. So that's basically what happened to her.
And then the next day, Earl and Valentine comes up trying to, you know, go to the doctor. They're like, well, maybe they already left town. Yeah, because I don't see the car. And then they notice that there's like, why do we hear music playing? So they go to the source of the music. They brush the dirt off. And the first thing you see is basically the Ford symbol. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that should be the hint, but no, they kept dusting. I'm like, why you keep dusting the Ford symbol right there? Next, you know, they dust, they see the headlights, and I'm like, okay, so that's when they understand that the car was brought down?
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, so not only they see the Ford grill, and that's not only see that, they see the headlights, but not only that, but the headlights are on. So the headlights are on, the car is buried vertically in the ground. I was like, okay, what the heck is going on? Because everybody's dying. They didn't witness, like, how many deaths so far? They witnessed 3 deaths in hours, right? First, the dude, their friend on the pole, then their friend farmer,
yep.
The head is just decapitated, then, and all the sheep is dead. And then the doctor
workers.
And his wife.
No, because
they didn't see the 2 workers, though. They just warned them, and then they left. They never
remember, they did go back because they was trying to go.
Well, when they came back, the road was
blocked
but remember,
they saw the helmet.
They saw the helmet with the blood bits. Right, but they didn't see that. That wasn't until later on.
But no, that's when they, I think this is, was it later on? Might have been. Because this is when they found out what was attacking them.
Right.
What might be attacking them.
Right, but they didn't, that's what I'm saying. They didn't go back till later on. They discover the doctor's body first.
Yeah.
And it was like the doctor and his wife. So that's like,
I mean, they didn't discover the body. They just knew that they died.
Well, yeah, they had to be dead, right?
They're like, oh, they're dead. We got to go. We need to go now.
They had to be dead at that point, right?
Cars buried on the ground. Oh, yeah, they're dead now. Nah.
Yeah.
They're not even here.
Right, right. So what else you like?
Let's see. So they're on horses. Valentine and Earl, they're on horses. Their plan is to go up the mountain. Was it a mountain trail, I believe?
Yeah, it was a mountain trail.
Yeah,
they
go up the mountain trail where the vehicles couldn't go because they was going to go to the other town to get some help. But the horses stop, basically knowing that something's wrong. And they're like, what's going on? What's going on? And I think Earl's horse was the one that got attacked because they all got kicked off the horses. Earl Tack is getting attacked by one of the little tiny worms that is used as a tongue to be pulled in. And then Valentine shoots and is like, okay, we shot that. But then they notice that there's something bigger under them. So their plan was just to run. And they ran until they came to concrete, which they jumped over. And the worm basically went headfirst into the concrete, basically killing itself. And like, yeah, we did it. We got it. Like, got the son of a bitch. Like, yeah.
Right.
And it's like, okay, yeah, you got that one. The girl comes out. And it's like, well, wow, that's amazing that you found that one. They go back to where she was at. It's like, well, the thing is, if that one was over there, then where was all these other three? There's like three more left.
Right.
And like,
yeah, she's the seismologist.
Yeah,
and so she's the one that looked at her readings and realized that there were three other monsters out there, because she could see that some of the seismic events occurred at the same time, but in very different locations.
And what key to them that another one was nearby them was when Earl basically had his foot go down a hole. He's like, damn, prairie dog. I'm like, are you sure that was a prairie dog hole?
Right.
Are you 100% sure? Because you just had that other one, you know, coming out of the ground, eating your horse, chasing you, killing yourself. I'm pretty sure when she said there's three more, there's one more near you.
Right.
And so they decided to, they're like, okay, we know there's one there. So they run towards a rock. And they're safe on that rock, but they know that the worm can't get it because it's not something that the worm can get through.
Right.
And they're thinking like, well, maybe if we wait here, the worm will leave. And so they wait like about an hour. They test the ground. It's like, no, the worm is still there. They wait the next day, test the ground. No, the worm is still there. Like, this thing is really waiting for us?
Right.
Really now? Oh, wow.
That worm was determined. It was a tiny morsel of meal, but it was going to get that tiny morsel. The worm knew that it was still up there. They ain't going nowhere. I was like, I'll wait you out. I got all day. I got all week. They finally figured out how they could pole vault from rock to rock
to get to the truck, to the female's truck, because the other truck is back at the town. And they're like, that's the only way to get back to town is with her truck. Luckily, they did make it. And I was like, okay, wow. So you have three worms to deal with within your town. And when they get back to town, they're basically trying to warn them, like, hey, we know what it is. There's like three more out there. We need to find a way to get out, because we can't just walk. We can't just take a car, because if we walk, they're going to know, because they go by the vibrations in the ground. They go by sound. So they know our location when we walk.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, that's good.
Right. That is clever. I really enjoyed that. So there were a couple of movies that have been out recently that were similar. So one is Sandra Bullock movie, Bird Box. And that was where it was something about sight. Like you weren't allowed to look at anything when you went outside. Like as long as you was inside your house or a building, you were fine. You can look around. But as soon as you went outside, the creatures outside would attack you through your sight. So you have to blindfold yourself and walk around. But the problem was that not only were there creatures out there, there's also crazy people out there that, like, sometimes the creature, when you looked at the creature, it would drive you crazy and you would kill yourself. But sometimes when you looked at the creature, it would turn into a crazy acolyte. So when you turn to a crazy acolyte, then your only job is to find other people that hadn't been affected by the creature and bring them outside so they could force you to look at the creature, right? So you have to deal with two different things. And plus, you're totally blind, so you have to get around the natural world totally blindfolded. And then the movie A Quiet Place, that's another one that worked on sound, except it was way more intense than Tremors, because in A Quiet Place, you couldn't make no sound, right? You couldn't whisper, you couldn't fart too loud, or whatever would get you. So those are the where I've seen different premises based on this type of this tool where they use sound as the creature's main, I guess their main, their super hearing is their main power, I guess. So what's some of the other things you liked about it?
Another scene that I did like was when they're all on roofs, on the roof of the buildings they're on. So you have the mother and the little daughter on one roof. I guess he's a redneck on a different, on his trailer. You had the teenage boy on a...
it's like a shack.
A sack, yeah, a metal sack. Then you have Valentine Earl, and I think that was Miguel, I believe, on the store roof. And then the other girl, what was her name? I think her name was Heather. Yeah. No, was it? No, Rhonda, on the water tower. And they're basically staying there. Like, we can't even move. Because they're just circling around us, just waiting for us to come down. Because they know we're here. They just don't know exactly our location until we touch the ground.
Right.
And then during that scene, they basically see, what's their name? Bert and Heather coming back to their house. And like they're trying to get them on radio. Like, hey, listen, we're on the roofs. We need you to go ahead and, you know, to do something for us. And then since they got home, the woman was like, hold up, there's a new meal. Let's go in that room. It's like, hey, guys, the whole whatever you're doing, they're coming towards you. And they're looking like, we don't see them. Like, they're underground. They're directly underground. They're coming towards you. One of them bursts through, and they just start filling it with bullets. I'm like,
right?
How many bullets can that thing
they,
really
they
take?
They had a ton of guns on their walls. So they had... So they just grabbing their guns and they're shooting the bullets. And then when they run out of bullets, they shoot it with another, with the other guns that are on the wall. They're just shooting it with bullets. And finally,
Bert got the elephant gun.
Bert got the elephant gun. And he shot it like a couple of times with the elephant gun. And that finally put it down. But yeah, they were in the battle for their lives at that point. Because the problem was that the creatures travel underground. They were in their underground basement.
Yep.
So apparently the walls of the underground basement wasn't super reinforced. So after they killed that one, they ended up going on the roof. And now everybody's trapped on everybody's roof.
And, like, and then they decided to come up with plans. Like, okay, so since you got your four-wheeler, we need you to go up the trail where only a four-wheeler can go. Because my car is basically done for because they took that out. You're the only one that worked. And like, negative, they took that out too. I'm like, right. How smart are these words? I'm like, I'm sorry. How smart are they?
And they couldn't use the seismologist's cars because her truck wasn't built to go over, to go off-roading. It can only go on the roads. So really, the gunner's truck were the only truck that could that could go through these mountain passes. But the worms took out that truck before they could get a chance to use it. So yeah, like, the worms are extremely smart.
For some reason, I'm like, okay.
Right.
But it's like, okay, that's two down, two to go. That's good. That's real good. How you gonna deal with it? That's a mystery. So then this is a scene where they come up with a plan where they're, it's like a giant tractor, I guess. Like, okay, so here's the plan. We're gonna use a small little looking vehicle, have it go in one direction. One of you two are gonna go run towards the tractor, get it, start it up. And then come pick us up, pick up everyone else.
It was a, I forgot what you call that. It's not a backhoe. It's a construction vehicle, and it scoops dirt. It's a dirt scooping. Dang, it's like a simple word. Can't remember. Vocabulary has failed me. But it's a giant piece of construction equipment. So yeah, they're going to distract it with like, it's kind of like a. It's kind of like
almost like a four wheeler, but not really.
Not talking about the car that they use as a distractor. It's like a golf cart.
Yeah.
It's like a small, except it's gas powered. So they get one guy, he starts up the little golf cart vehicle and have it go in one direction. The worms are attracted to it and they leave the houses and they go chase that. And then somebody else is supposed to run to the construction vehicle, and then they're going to attach. Excuse me. They're going to attach some kind of like a dirt carrier to it. It's usually used to carry dirt and debris, but they're going to use it to carry the people off of the roofs. And because it's big and heavy enough, it's not something that the worms could easily tip over. But what's funny is that how they decide who was going to go
Victor
for the
and
run.
Victor, and I was like, okay.
Valentine
was like, okay, how are we going to do this? Like, okay, Valentine's like, I'm faster, I can get it. And it was like, but I have more experience. I'm older and wiser. I'm like, okay, we're going to do rock, paper, scissors then. They do rock, paper, scissors. Oh, wins. It was like, I decide who goes. So he's like, okay, I'll see you later. So Valentine's hit him in the stomach and then just runs for him. I'm like,
right.
You know, of course he was going to do that. That makes a lot more sense.
Right. He hits him in the stomach and he basically chose himself to go run to get the construction vehicle. And then halfway there, he gets stopped by the worms.
Yeah, the worm, because the vehicle they use as a distraction flipped over and like, that is not good.
Right.
So then they all have to distract the worms by making loud noises, stomping. And what's the name? Rhonda gets the good idea, since he's on a water tower, is to basically knock the pool over to cause the water to fall down so it would distract the worm.
Right, because the worms are right there where Valentine was. And it's like she actually told him to stop. So he stopped running and stood still so he wasn't making any noises. So the worms knew he was in the area. So they're trying to feel around for him, which is kind of funny. It kind of, I don't want to say it breaks. Sometimes with the worms too, they just eat up the entire ground around them.
Yeah, they right? do that. Or they just send their, or other times they just send their tongue
right.
to look around, which is what the worm did.
Right. So in this instance, the worm sent one of his tongues to look around. The worms are a trip because they have three tongues and each tongue has a mouth, right? So
yeah, that mouth is used to grab you and pull right. you in.
And yeah, they use a mouth with teeth. So the mouth is looking around for him, sliding around, and Valentine is doing his best to avoid the worm without actually moving. So at one point he lifts his foot up and the worm is sweeping its evil tongue around where he lifts his foot up and he's avoiding it until the worm is finally distracted by the water falling off the water tower.
And then, you know, he's able to get the vehicle started, goes ahead and he basically rolls over the tongue too.
Yeah, he rolls over.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that tongue is gone.
Right.
Picks up, able to pick up everyone, then goes to the gunner's house and pick them up. And they're like, okay, so what's the plan? We're going to go to the mountains. That's our plan. And the funny thing is, when they're going to pick up the gunners, they're telling them to hurry up because the vehicle can't just stay in one place. Otherwise, the worm is just going to dig a pothole into the ground and cause the vehicle to just fall in.
Right, fall in or fall over.
Yeah, and the gunners are basically making these homemade grenades. I'm like, okay.
Man, the gunners had all they had. They wanted to bring as many guns as they want to. Then they can't decide which gun they want to take. And then they got all of their bombs. And then I think it was a couple other things. Because he had a whole, like, backpack, a duffel bag
yeah.
full of stuff that he wants to take with him. So they finally get all his stuff. They finally get into the passenger part of their weird vehicle construct, and then they're able to drive away before the worms dig under the ground and cause them to fall in.
And so this is near the last scene. They basically get stuck on the rock because the worms were smart enough to dig a pothole in front of the vehicle, causing it to stop, fall in, and force everyone to run towards the rock. I was like, okay, yeah, somehow these worms are that smart, but I just still don't get it, but whatever.
Right,
I just don't understand. It seems like they shouldn't be that smart, but I guess they are. And then, you know, they're on the rocks, getting mad at each other. What's his name? Not Earl. Gunner, Bert,
right,
mad,
right.
Saying we had tons of food, water, and munitions at our house. We could have just stayed there. And then Valentine's like, no, you couldn't have, because they would have just made your house sink in and gotten you.
Right, right.
And I was like, well, what? And he basically, you know, they're all trying to calm down. Next, you know, it get like an hour or so passed, and then Bert's like, you know, starvation starting to kick in. What I should do is take this bomb, light it up, and walk out there, let it eat me, and have it blown up. And then Bert's like, you know what? That's not a bad idea. We can basically fish these things out. And for that plan to work, they start throwing rocks in one area, wait for the worm to basically be in that area, light the fuse, and they had to use like a short fuse, like a 15-second fuse. And then Bert is using these cannon fuses, and then what's his name? Earl's like, what kind of cannon? Why do you have cannon fuse? He's like, for my cannon. I'm like, why do you have a cannon? I'm like, you know what? I'm not even gonna question it.
Right.
You're that type of guy who has up is just being prepared for almost anything for no reason.
Right.
You know, they light the fuse, they throw the bomb to where the rocks was at, and the worm takes it and it blows up. And they're like, yeah, we got the first one. So they do the same thing for the second worm. What the second worm does, yeah, he takes the bait, but he spits it out. I'm like, again, why are these worms smart? It's like they adapted to things.
Right.
It's like if one dies, it's like, okay, that one died because of that. We're not going to fall for that one. And I'm like, okay, they're smart for no reason. So then when it throws the bomb back, they all have to move out the way. And when it does throw the bomb back, it throws it on the other bombs.
Right.
And they only have one bomb left, and that's the one Valentine is holding. I'm like, wow. That's just unbelievable. And to make things a lot more worse, Valentine, Earl, and Rhonda are on the ground. And they're like, what are you guys doing over there? I'm like, what do you mean? the bomb was in the air, landed next to of course they're going to be over there. There's not many places they can hide on that one rock you're on. And so they decided to basically run toward back to the rock, but they had to stop because the worm was there. And they was like, okay, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make noise, force the worm to come over to us. And, you know, the worm disappears. And the Vines was like, wait, don't move. It's not that stupid. It's still there. And I'm like, you know, seeing how it made a, made a trap, it learned from the other one. I'm pretty sure, yeah, I agree with Valentine. Right. That is still there.
Right. Because at first the worm was right there where, because it's Bert, Rhonda, well, it's Bert and Bert and Valentine are together, or they're close together, and then Rhonda is nearby, and they're so they're all on the ground. They're not moving because they want to fool the worm, and the worm is in the area kind of searching for him. And then the people on the rocks, they make the noise to distract the worm.
Yeah, Earl even gets off the rock and just use the butt of his gun on the ground. I'm like, okay, yeah, that should definitely work.
Right, and then the worm goes underground, and then that's when Valentine realized, oh, this. He ain't that dumb, right?
He's not that dumb.
He's waiting for us to move so he can attack us. And so that's when they come up with what plan?
It's like a stampede plan. So Valentine starts to run. Earl follows him. And like, where's the lighter? And Ron is like, I got the lighter, follows them. And so what they did was they got to the edge, I guess, on a mound they're on.
It's basically called a cliff. Let's call it a cliff.
Near the edge of the cliff. They light the fuse. Valentine throws it, but apparently he throws it too far. The worm's still charging at him. Rhonda and Earl get out of the way. And then at the last second, that's when Valentine jumps and the worm just goes flying out of the cliff. And it's like, oh, yep, there's the last one.
Right.
And just falls right down to the ground dying. And I'm like, there you go. Right. You all lived. Congratulations.
Right. Yes. What happened was, the reason he called it the stampede plan, he took the bomb and he threw it behind the worm. The worm panicked, right? Because there was an explosion behind it. It panicked. And then it went too fast. Like, it went real fast. And then Valentine stayed in his way and then jumped out the way at the last minute. And because the worm was going too fast, couldn't stop himself, he went through the wall of the rock, which is the face of a cliff, and then went down and then busted itself open on the side of the rocks at the bottom of the cliff. I thought it was a brilliant ending, because it's like when they're on the rocks, like, I don't know how they're going to do it. They're stuck there. They're going to die.
You got one worm with the fishing trap, but then how are you going to get the other worm, since it was like smart? It's like, I'm not falling for that.
Yeah, that's what's neat about this movie. Is like, it seems like they can't use the same killing technique every time. Like, when they kill one worm, they got to figure out a different technique to kill the other worm. Then they got to figure out a different technique to kill the next worm. It's fun, right? So so this was a fun movie. There was a couple of parts that I really liked that we didn't hit. So one of them was when they had actually got a piece of the first worm, like,
oh, yeah,
one of
the tongue parts. It's like, I told you I wasn't stuck.
Right. So, yeah, that was the one attached to the truck. So they take it back to the, they took it back to the store that the Chinese man owned. What's his name?
He was playing as Walter Chang.
Yeah, so Walter, they took it to Walter Chang's shop. And Walter was like, I give you $5 for it.
Like, 20, like, 10, 15. Okay, 15. I'm like, right. Really?
He's like, immediately he thinks of buying it. And so once he buys it, he starts to take. Remember, they're only like 15, less than 15 now, because a couple of people died, maybe 12 people in this town. And he's already making money by selling pictures of themselves, of the town folks, with the worm tongue creature, right? Because when they first get it, they think it's some kind of snake, because they don't realize that it's attached to a larger creature. So now they're posing with the worm tongue, and he's charging them $3 a pop.
I'm trying to remember what the kid name was who just kept playing pranks.
That's the hold on, let me look it up.
I want to say Edgar. No,
that's hold on. He had that weird last name, Jane. That's the Jane dude. What's his name?
Melvin.
Yeah, Melvin. That's right. Now I remember, because they say his name like he was such an annoyance. Come on, Melvin.
Yeah, because he's
playing around, Melvin.
Come on, you touch the truck, you're going to wish you had. I'm like, ooh, I'm so scared. I'm like,
or like that time they was trying to get Melvin to move someplace, but he wouldn't go. And so that's when Earl No, not Earl, but Gunner. Burt Gunner. He gave him
revolver. He gave him a revolver. He's like, here, this will make you go. He takes it. He starts running. He sees the worm basically coming out. And he starts trying to fire. He's like, good, Burt, you asshole. I'm like, what do you expect? He's talking about, I wouldn't even trust you with a gun in World War III.
No,
like,
he said, I wouldn't give it to you unless it was World War III. So that was funny.
But talking about the guys who running, didn't it? I'm like,
right. Did. He wasn't stupid enough to give him a loaded gun. But he knew that Melvin wanted to hold a gun. So he gave Melvin a gun so that he would go, give him some courage. And so he's running, I think it's from the truck or something,
to the
rocks.
Yep.
And then, you know, he tries to shoot the worm, but ain't got no bullets in that gun. And that was a big time. It looked like a Magnum. It looked like a .357 Magnum.
I thought it was a revolver.
Yeah, that's what a Magnum is. Okay. A giant revolver. I don't know if it still is, but at one time it was the deadliest handgun in the world. Clint Eastwood, in one of his movies, he gave a speech about it. This is the .357 Magnum. It's the toughest handgun in the world. It'll blow your head clean off. Now, I want to ask you something. You feeling lucky, punk? Do you? Huh? Punk? So, I'm sure the line isn't exactly like that, but that's what everybody remembers about that movie, and that he carried a .357 Magnum. So, there was another part that I wanted to... That I really liked, but I can't quite grasp it.
Was it the little girl on the pogo stick almost getting eaten?
That was fun, but that wasn't what I was thinking about. But yeah, she's on the pogo stick. She's actually counting how many times she's hopping on the pogo stick. Like, she's in the hundreds, right? And she got headphones on, so she don't hear anybody yelling at her. And so finally, Valentine has to run and dive and rush her into the house before the worm came to eat her. So I can't think of it. Maybe I'll think of it later when we get into the trivia. But before we get into the trivia, let me ask you, what did you think of this movie?
It was a good movie.
I thought you'd like it. I knew you would like it because you're McClone and that's how these things work. But yeah, that was I remember when the movie came out. I think I watched it a couple of times. I really enjoyed this movie. And it's not really a horror movie. It's more of a monster movie. It's a fun monster movie. And I think I really like when it is the right balance of humor and horror. I like those movies. So maybe not as scary as hardcore horror fans would like, but this is definitely a fun movie worth looking at. So we in the trivia section now. We get our trivia from IMDb. Why don't you hit us up with the first thing?
S.S. Wilson said that he got the idea from the film while he was working for the U.S. Navy in the California desert. While resting on a rock, he imagined what it might be like if something underground kept him from getting off the rock.
Yeah, so he was basically having his imagination running wild. So he imagined the game, The Floor is Lava. It seemed to me that's where his imagination went, The Floor is Lava. So Kevin Baker would later call the filming of Tremors to be the single most fun time I've ever had in a movie in my entire career. So that's heavy praise for that movie.
For the scene in which Wanda had to get out her jeans to escape the Grabnoid about to eat her, Finn Carter intentionally didn't rehearse the scene. That way, the response she gives to having to undress in front of Kevin Bacon in less than 5 seconds was authentic.
Right. So that was a really good scene too. And what's funny is that I forgot to mention that these creatures is what they call these creatures Graboid.
Yeah, Graboid.
It was named by what's his name? Shin?
We're talking about Walter?
Walter.
Yeah.
Walter gave it the name Graboid. Because they would that was a scene. There was a whole scene
where
they're trying to come up with
the
name.
I'm like, why are you trying to focus on what to call them? Talking about we discovered we should have the right to do. I'm like,
right.
No, because you need to get out.
First they asked the geologist what it's called. She's like, I don't know. We've never seen this before. It was like, well, we find it, we should have the right to name it, right? So they call it a Graboid. So one idea by the special effects crew was for the worms to have an outer shell. When above the dirt, the shell would retract and reveal a slimier inner worm. However, many production members started to giggle at the phallic resemblance that it had with a foreskin. So this was changed to a big worm sprouting several smaller worms from its mouth. So at first it was going to have like a dry outer shell and a slimy inner shell,
right,
or inner self that would come out when it was above the ground. And people thought that looked too much like a penis. So they was like, nope, looked too much like a penis. So because that's what they refer to as a phallic phallic resemblance. So whenever you hear a phallic resemblance or a phallic symbol, they're basically talking about a male penis. And you see a lot of that in art around the world, especially ancient art. It's like a tall, tallish, towerish looking thing. It's like, yeah, somebody was basically trying to depict a male's penis. And there's one thing that's shaped like a giant dick right now. It's flying off into space, and that's what's his name? Jeff Bezos' rocket. Like, more than any other rocket, it resembles a giant dick right down to the tiny balls at the bottom of the rocket. It's, I think he's sending us a message. Yeah. So, William Shatner just recently went up in one of those space dicks. So, he played Captain Kirk on the original Star Trek series. So, everybody's really excited about that. It's like, ooh, Captain Kirk finally going into space. And it's like, it's mixed feelings. Like, you're kind of glad that he got a chance to go into space. And also upset is like all this money being used to send just two or three people into space could be used to, you know, house homeless people or something. But, you know, we're never going to get stuff like that. We don't get good stuff.
We don't. So there are only two interior sets in the entire movie. Walter's store and Bert and Heather's basement. Every other shot is an exterior. Right. Which is,
They shot almost the entire movie outside. Although Tremors was not a big hit during its theatrical run, the film became a runaway smash in the home video market and ultimately tripled its original box office gross with VHS sales and rentals. So yeah, it made a lot of money after it was out of the theaters.
Prior to the film release, Bacon felt that the film was a career low. I broke down and fell to the sidewalk, screaming to my pregnant wife, I can't believe I'm doing a movie about underground worms.
Right. So even though it was a fun experience, at the same time, he was worried that this movie either was a sign that his career was on a down, was sliding downward, or that he was at the end of his career as like a top billing star. So fortunately, that's not what happened. He went on to star in much greater movies, and now he's just chill, right? This was originally given an R rating by the MPAA, not for violence, but for the language. The film included as many as 20 F-bombs. As an appeal, producers removed all utterances of the F word, with the exception of two. Many of the swear words were dubbed over with other words, including, can you fly now, sucker? We killed that mother humper. And what the shit when Valentine is overlooking the dead sheep. So, yeah.
Yeah, they don't care about, you know, sex scene. They just care about curse words.
Right, man. They really care a lot about the F words.
Like, you know what? You take too many F-bombs, you get in that rated R movie. Okay, fine. Yeah,
that'll turn. They had two F-bombs. And that gave it a PG-13 rating, along with the blood and guts. They kept it at a PG-13 rating. But if they added one more F-bomb, it shifts over to rated R, is ridiculous.
It's like, the limit is two. That's the maximum F-bombs you can use. If we use three, it's rated R off the bat.
Right.
Okay, then. Wow, you guys are strict.
I think on television, even on the highest rating, the most you can use is one F-bomb. At least on regular television. On cable, the sky's the limit. Right?
All right, first film as an actress for country music singer Reba McEntire.
Right. So yeah, she was she played Mrs. Gunner.
Yeah.
So she was real good in this film too, and it really showed people that she can act and really opened the doors for her acting career, because the only thing people knew her as is a country music artist. So the gang at the beginning of the film, where Val misses a staple eight times with his hammer, was not entirely scripted and was Kevin Bacon's spontaneous idea. Fred Ward's reaction was completely genuine. It's like, why are you not hitting that hammer? hitting that. Well, it wasn't a nail. It was more like a staple, right?
Yeah.
So it was like he's missing the staple. Like, how are you not hitting that staple, right?
One early drop concept for the Grabnoids was that they had what in the world phone? What was that? Jesus, phone.
Having a problem with your phones?
Yeah, just automatically scroll all the way down. Was that they had the ability to perfectly mimic sounds, which they used to lure an unsuspecting prey. This idea was dropped because the writers thought the Grabnoids had too many special abilities. Like, yeah, why would you give them sound? Like, come on.
Right, right. They're already smart. And the other thing is that then it would be more difficult to write solutions to whatever problems that the people found them in. Because it's like, if the worms can imitate sounds, then presumably they can do that at any time. And then the people would, then they would have to come up with different solutions. But, you know, I guess if you're a talented enough writer, you can write your way out of that.
Maybe.
The filmmakers were forced to add the scene towards the beginning where Rhonda is unknowingly stalked by a Graboid as she heads to her truck, in the scene where old Fred is killed. They originally wanted to no hint of a monster in the film until the road workers were killed to make the audience think that a person may be the killer, such as with Edgar's death. The studio instead wanted to market the film as a monster movie and thus demanded more scenes involving on-screen kills before their big reveal. But the way it was originally written, I think it probably would have worked. I think it would have worked if they made it look like a serial killer and then it turned out to be monster worms.
Because by adding the scene where she's getting stalked and also the scene where the guy's on a tower with old Fred, yeah, it's like, you know, it already hints that there's a monster nearby and it's not just a human doing it.
Right.
Because no human's going to be legit, is going to scare someone up a tower where they're holding a gun.
Right, right.
This is not going to happen.
Right.
Michael Gross began filming. Began filming only one day after shooting the very last episode of Family Ties that came out in 1982.
Right. So that's crazy. It's like he had a job right away. Like Family Ties is ending. Family Ties have been on for several years, and he had a job like right away, right after that. It's just he. It was the I'm trying to think of the actor's name, but I can't remember what was the kid's name in Back to the Future. McFly. What was McFly's name? Can't remember.
I was going
to
say Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox. Thank you. I appreciate that. So Michael J. Fox was in this very same show, and he had a more severe version of this. So Michael Gross finished filming, and the next day got another job.
Michael J. Fox is like doing both of the movie
and the TV show at the same time. He was getting like 3 hours of sleep a night. That is the stamina of a young person. And still, even when he was doing that, he was still one of the best actors on that show, right? So, according to that's not me. Did you?
You're on N.
Okay, yeah. So Ron Underwood said that he was uninterested when Reber McEntire asked to audition for the film, saying he had grown tired of seeing celebrities trying to become actors, even if they cannot act, and that it was gimmicky casting. However, after begrudgingly letting her audition, he was blown away by her performance and realized that she was a natural actress, immediately knowing she was perfect for Heather Gunner. And
I was gonna be like, I don't like getting celebrities to act. Right. I want actual actors. Oh, wait, she knows how to act. Okay, never mind that.
Right, right, right.
According to promotional material from the Sci-Fi Channel, the official scientific name of the Grabnoids is Cadidris Mexicana. You know what?
Yep. I think you said it right, because I was struggling with that pronunciation in my head. But then when you just said it, Cadidris
Mexicana.
Cadidris.
Cadidris Mexicana.
Right. Cadidris Mexicana. I think that's right.
Why Mexicana?
Because
they're in Mexico?
They were either in Nevada or New Mexico. So if they were any of those places, those used to be part of Mexico.
Okay.
So I think that's why they called it that. So Burt's 1989 GMC Jimmy was actor Michael Gross's personal vehicle. He bought it brand new in 1988 and kept it until 1997. He bought a new GMC Jimmy, which he kept until 2006. So he loves He loves the GMC Jimmy.
Yeah, so is it. Composer Robert Folk
it's supposed to be Q.
Yeah, that's what I'm on.
Yeah, it's supposed to say license plate for Burt.
That's R.
Oh, man. I didn't. I said because
P is highlighted as Burt, and then Q is composer. Then R is the license.
Oh, shoot. It's all wrong. It's all wrong. No, I'll read that part. Then. All
right.
It says, the license plate for Burt and Heather's Gummer's vehicle reads UZI for you. The bumper sticker on the vehicle's right bumper reads Free Afghanistan. And it says Free Afghanistan because at the time, Russia was trying to conquer Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And what does it say for R for you?
No, for me, Q is the composer. R is the license plate for Burt and Heather.
I totally messed that up. All right.
All right. Composer Robert Folk was brought in at the very last minute to rescore the film. This was due to the original score composed by credited composer Ernest Troost was lacking the punch for that it needed. Was lacking the punch that it needed for the film musically. Approximately 30 minutes or more was written by Folk and strangely goes uncredited in the film's credit. Oddly enough, both scores are used in the film. Troost's scores is most westernly and country-like with the uses of guitars and harmonicas and is mostly used in softer moments, whereas Folk's score is more epic and used more trumpets, violins, and big instruments and is used more closer to the climax and in more intense moments.
Right. So whenever it sounds like really orchestry or whatever, then it's Robert Folk, who is uncredited. And then when you get like that Western music with the guitars, that's the original composer, the credited composer Troost. So there was like, Ernest Troost didn't have enough bang. You're not getting my bang. So they got another composer and they didn't give him credit, which kind of messed up.
That is messed up.
But I guess that's the agreement that they had. I guess. I don't know.
All right. So the Grabnors were designed by Amalgamated Dynamics.
Dynamics.
Oh, Dynamics. The full-scale Grabnoid scenes being dug up by Val was cast in lightweight foam, buried in a trench, and then dug up to achieve the desired effect. Nice.
The various sounds made by the Graboids have become popular to reuse in other films and can be heard in such films as Predator 2, 1990, Starship Troopers, 1997, Ants, 1998, Mosquito, 1994, Eight-Legged Freaks in 2002, and Kong Skull Island in 2017. So even all the way to Kong Skull Island, they were still using the same sound effects that were created in the 1980s in this movie of Tremors. Hold on, let me double check. 1994, something like that. But still, 20-year-old sound effects they were still using. That's totally awesome.
Also, earlier was in Predator 2 and Ants? Was Ants. Right. Okay. And I think I did see Eight-Legged Freaks, but wow. Wow. All right, where are we? Let's see. Okay. The Grabnoids are very reminiscent of the giant worms in Dune that came out in 1984. Both are giant worms, live underground, live in the desert, have large mouth on the end, and respond to vibrations on the surface. Also, both films have the characters escaping the worms by retreating to rocks where they can't get attacked. I mean, what else are you going to do with that type of basic information? They're worms underground, using vibrations. What else? You can't just be like, oh, maybe. No,
well, you could say that worms could see or something. You could have used any other mechanic. But basically, the worms and Tremors were influenced by Dune.
Dune, yeah.
Right. That's basically what happened. Right, and there are lots of references of Dune and lots of other movies.
Like, oh, yeah, I know. Because there was a video that I think I told you about. It was every reference of Dune and other movies. Right. I'm like, uh-huh.
Right. Yeah, Dune is extremely influential. So now that we found out what you think, you thought that the film was good, and I knew it was one of the classic films when I was growing up, let's see what the critics think. You know what? I don't think I wrote the correct Rotten Tomatoes score. Let's see.
You said audience gave it 83% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, that's not right. Hold on. Let me double check that. It could be wrong. I need to know for absolute certainty. Maybe I did write the right thing. Maybe I didn't. So I'm going to look it up real quick. Hold on a second. This computer, you're going to hear tapping, folks. You're going to hear tapping on my computer. Because there's going to be real sound effects. I don't know if I'm going to be able to mix it out. You might just, oh, you know what? My computer doesn't want to hit the internet for some reason.
Yeah, let me look it up.
I see what happened. It's on the wrong internet. Now I'm connecting it to the correct. It was trying to connect to the Xfinity. Your phone ever does that? Connect to your Xfinity internet?
Well, when it feels like it wants to try.
Yeah. Okay, I got it now.
And you got it?
Well, I got Rotten Tomatoes. And now I'm looking up Tremors just to make sure that what I have in my notes is the same as what's actually on Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm like halfway there. It's just trying to load. I'm like,
oh, yeah. Tremors got 86%.
86, all right.
It has an 86% critic score. And let me see what the audience score is. As soon as Windows. Oops, no. What I messed that up. Hold on. Let me do this. Windows is messing me up. Windows is like, I don't want you to see 75% audience score.
Yeah, on this, you said so critics, you said it was 93, audience 83.
No, that's wrong.
So that's wrong.
So I'm going to change it on my end. 86 and hold on a second. Goodness gracious, where is everything? You know, you get a new computer and you don't know where anything is at anymore. That's what's happening to me. 75% audience score. You know, that's fair. Yeah, that's about right. And then IMDb reviews gave it 7.1 out of 10. That's about right. I think that's about right. But it's still a fun movie. So why don't you tell us what the first critic was saying?
All right, Michael Wimington from Los Angeles Times. It's a zippy melodrama for a small town America and a small towners at heart. Well executed Keith for audience that will still be amused at the notion that the bug are getting so big that they'll drag us down.
Yeah. That's pretty good. I don't know what Keith is. Niche, I guess. I don't know. Using fancy words. Mike Massey from Gone with the Twins wrote, the mixture of unexceptional heroes, monster movie violence, and teen comedy all unraveling in a desolate arid landscape is certainly unique. So I think this is one of our Rotten Tomato scores, but he called them unexceptional heroes, and I defy you. Those folks were smart and they were hardy. How dare you refer to them as unacceptable? I defy that. City slicker, that's what that is. And then that's a good name right there. James O'Healy. I'm going to say O'Healy. He's from the sci-fi movie page. He wrote, this is a 1950s B-movie type stuff, but Tremors is fast-paced, funny, and clever enough to make it all worth watching. Yes. Yes, this is a B-movie. Yes, it is a fun B-movie. James O'Healy gets it. He gets it.
Vincent Canby from New York Times. More than anything else, it looks like the sort of movie that might have been put together so that tourists visiting Universal Studios could see a movie being made.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. It's still good, right? It's still good. So what are you trying to say, Vincent? You have to have faith for that to work, Mr. Vincent. I don't know. I don't know these guys.
What I'm seeing on my end.
What do you see?
Oh, yeah, just go down to number 10. I don't know if you got it there.
Oh, does it say The Fly?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. I wrote that wrong. I didn't change that.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, The Fly, yeah, okay.
It's bad editing on my part. So we change it over here. So I'm changing it right now. You're going to hear typing, folks.
Tremors? Or you can say Tremor is, as of this recording, is available where?
I think it is. It's still on AMC. You can get it, like Amazon has certain channels, but you have to subscribe to those channels. So I could have watched it for free if I subscribed to AMC, but I am resisting that. I'm not going to do that. That's why I rented it. So, yeah, as Zach mentioned, Tremors is, as of this recording, available at AMC. And then the next episode, we're going to go to one of my favorites, Night of the Comet. And that is currently available on Pluto TV, but I'll probably rent that too. Or if it's cheap enough, I might even buy it because I hate commercials and I don't want to watch the movies doing commercials. Like, you folks, have you ever watched YouTube without a subscription? That will make you want to kill somebody. It's like, it'll make you want to stab your big toe because it's so excruciating. It's like, I would rather have a knife wound than to watch YouTube without a subscription. They got me, okay? They found my weak point, and that's why I'm paying a subscription for YouTube because they put so many commercials on there. It's like they can be in the middle of a sentence. They don't care because you'll be like, and over here we have, and then all of a sudden you got a commercial. And then it continues the video. And then the people in the video, they got their own commercials, but they put their own commercials in a sensible space, and it makes sense because they're trying to make some money. I can understand that. But then YouTube will come in there, and if you don't have a subscription, they'll splice in a commercial at the most unfortunate place, and it's, I can't do it.
Like, so with some people, they're like, okay, you know, we'll be right back, and then the YouTube ad is right there. Right. They know what it is.
But it's not a YouTube ad. It's their ad.
No, I'm like, for some YouTube channels, they know what the ad is going to
right,
be.
Right, right, right,
right. So they just end, you know, just make the pause there and then come back.
Right,
to it.
Right. Yeah, so it's nasty and mean-spirited on YouTube's part. But that's why they got me paying a subscription. So one last time, if you like this show, then please help us grow. To do that, you can rate us or write a review on podchaser.com, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. And you can also share our show with anybody. Share it with someone. Add a pound or hashtag, I say a pound again.
Yeah, hashtag.
Add a hashtag or at Backlick Cinema on your favorite social media sites.
Don't forget that you can contact us at fanmail@backlookcinema.com.
Believe me, it matters. Be safe, hug your loved ones, and be outstanding.